We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt. Joining me, as always, over there in damn near tropical Chicago, Illinois, the one and only frigid Dan Rubenstein, sir. How are you?
I'm pretty good, Ty. I was a few hours ago with a shovel digging into or attempting to dig into the cold, icy morass of sadness that is the piles of rock-hard frozen snow that are in front of my garage because I needed to get to TJ, Trader Joe's. I needed my vaguely artisanal creative snacks that you loathe but probably secretly love. Mm. And I was thinking to myself, we're deep into winter. We're right. Deep into winter in this blustery, icy Midwestern time of I was going to say of ours, but there are probably people listening in Tucson and La Jolla and Delray or something like that are enjoying themselves plenty. And I'm thinking to myself, I can't help but think that certain college football teams even feel this way when it's warm out.
Yeah, it's true.
That they're taking any possible tool to try and jostle, to try and loosen the situation they're in, to clear a pathway. And no matter what they do, they can't seem to make headway. Luckily, I have a car with pretty big tires and I chanced it and it was fine. But I was thinking to myself, in the dead of winter, who finds themselves in this type of situation, metaphorical situation, as it were? And I asked Twitter, there are a lot of teams, in an icy morass. So I brought the idea to you, and I needed to make some dough babies as well because I needed to reverse that type of sad thinking. So I did that recently, and I got even more thinking about the teams we might talk about today. How do you get out of this icy doldrums?
Permafrost. You're talking about permafrost, Dan.
I'm talking permafrost, Ty. That's what I'm talking. And I submit the teams to you for your thoughts and for our conversation. And here we are, ready to, and I'm going to say, throw some comforting positivity cocoa on this frozen, icy.
Positivity cocoa. Continue.
Yeah, not just warmth, but delicious warmth. Because I want to look at these situations in terms of not just be problem-oriented, but solution-oriented. And this is where we find ourselves on this very icy cold Midwestern Monday afternoon.
Boy, this weather thing for you in Chicago has really been an existential experience, hasn't it?
I get apologies from people I know here, from Jody with an I and her friends and family, saying it's bad, and it's usually bad, but it's not like this, which I don't know how to interpret, but it has affected me, yes. I'm just trying to be honest.
Look, it's cold out there. You're getting a ton of snow. We got 30 inches, and we got 5 more on Super Bowl Sunday. Mm-hmm. So it's a long, cold, winter for many of us listening. Wherever you may be, we wish you all the best. We thank you so much for giving us your undying support. Don't forget to go on out to our website at solidverbal.com if you're new to the show. If you want to subscribe to our content, either via podcast or via the newsletter, you can find all the information there. We also do have a Patreon, which you can find at verballers.com. Took a little bit of a breather throughout the remainder of January after the national championship. But yep. Now that we're through and into February, we've got all sorts of cool stuff planned. No pun intended. We've got some off-topic content, which has always been in very high demand among the most loyal Verballers. That is now going to be a Patreon-only thing. So go on out to verballers.com if you want more info on what you can expect to find. But we do appreciate the support near and far. Follow along on social media, all the usual hotspots. There's a Twitch channel with now, of course, because of the news of the new college football game at some point, presumably in our natural lives, we're going to be streaming a little bit more of that NCAA 14 stuff just to keep the whistle nice and wet.
What?
Now, Daniel, before we get into that icy permafrost layer of college football.
Yeah.
Should I play the breaking news? You want me to?
Yeah, why not? It's a fun sound.
What the hell? I'm not yelling. I'm just trying to play cool.
Oh, okay.
Still kind of getting over my vocal thing, but we've got a Big Ten schedule, right? Remember this point in time, maybe like 6 months ago, maybe a little longer. I didn't do the math. I remember waiting on edge to figure out what's the Big Ten going to do now that they've plugged the season back in. We had an abbreviated Big Ten schedule, conference only. Right. This is a much, much different dynamic because this is a normal schedule. We've got a normal schedule for all the Big Ten teams here. It came out. Any immediate thoughts in looking at some of these draws?
Kind of a spicy non-conference slate for the Big Ten between Washington, Oregon, Auburn, Colorado, Notre Dame for Purdue, in addition to Oregon State. There's some Oklahoma and Nebraska match up. So there are some, I think, Indiana has Cincinnati. Yep. There's some high-quality teams, Michigan State, Miami. A lot of intrigue, I would say, in early to mid-September. And then we've got a Dublin game, if I'm reading this correctly, between Illinois and Nebraska, week zero.
Yep, a natural game to play in Dublin, sure.
Your classic Illini fans across Ireland will be very pumped up.
A lot that Illinois schedule?
Yeah.
It's not too bad. It's not too bad.
What about that Illinois roster, though?
The Illinois roster, different story, but as schedules go.
Okay.
As schedules go, I got an away game against Penn State, and of course, they're home against Wisconsin in there. But in looking over all these schedules, I looked at Illinois. I was like, damn, if Brett Bielema could spin some sort of magic in Champaign, it's not an impossible schedule to get to that six-win mark.
No, I mean, you miss, the Michigan schools and Ohio State. That's always somewhat of a positive. And they miss Indiana. I mean, you're talking about, that's a losable, an exceedingly losable game. So, sure, a nice soft takeoff for the Brett Bielema era for Illinois. Michigan's back half of the schedule is pretty dicey. As I think we enter into the twilight part of Jim Harbaugh's tenure in Ann Arbor, it's Northwestern, Michigan State, Indiana, Penn State, Maryland, and Ohio State. At least Ohio State's in Ann Arbor, but it's not an amazing stretch. Ohio State starts off with what we assume to be a pretty tough 1-2 with Minnesota. Tanner Morgan going to be there until at least 2028. Oregon in Columbus, returning the favor that never was this past year, of course, with the Big Ten and Pac-12 not competing in non-conference games. So we'll see what Oregon looks like. I think that defense is going to be pretty interesting for the Ducks against a first-year quarterback for Ohio State. Penn State getting Wisconsin and Auburn in the first two of 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I think could be challenging.
That's going to be tough. I stand by the fact that I think Penn State is going to be a little bit better off maybe than we'd expect. The quarterback thing to me is a huge unknown at this point. It was last year. Right. It's an even bigger deal this year. What jumped out about the Penn State schedule to me is that it feels like there's adequate buffer. You don't have any
murderer's row situations on that schedule. You've got Wisconsin and then sort of a down week before you've got Auburn. Then you've got Villanova before you've got Indiana. I guess Iowa after Indiana is maybe the one spot. But otherwise, Illinois before Ohio State, Maryland before Michigan, Rutgers before Michigan State. That's a decent setup for them.
Sure. I look at the Iowa schedule as well in terms of perennially good to very good to excellent teams, a category Iowa fits into somewhere. The back half of their schedule is at a Wisconsin team who looks like they've taken a pretty big step back on offense. Northwestern, who will be starting a new quarterback. Minnesota at home, Illinois at home, Northwestern on the road in that rivalry game. Missing Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State. Not that Michigan and Michigan State coming off of last year are all that dangerous, but you never know with year two of Mel Tucker and a bounce back year from Jim Harbaugh. That's a nice road. It's tough to open with Indiana and Iowa State, and Iowa State's on the road for Iowa. But otherwise, that's a pretty nice slate for the Hawks, Ty. This is a territory we like to own. A nice, easy rollout for Iowa football. It's kind of nice.
It's not bad. It is really not bad. Really not bad at all.
Yeah, Northwestern misses Ohio State, though Michigan and Wisconsin are both on the road. They have a tough stretch in there. Michigan, Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, if those teams are hitting anywhere near their ceiling. That's a tough one for Northwestern, working in a new quarterback and a new defensive coordinator. The Purdue schedule looks real tricky.
Oh, man.
Notre Dame, Iowa, Ohio State, Northwestern, it's all tough on the road. I felt like I was on an island. This is where I like to pat myself on the back, that I didn't fully understand the Jeff Brohm adoration during that Louisville flirtation. And I think we've reached a point where if they don't make a bowl game this year, I don't know what his buyout is. I know he's getting paid a whole bunch of money, and I don't know how long you can pay a coach a lot of money to go 4-8. And so that's where we're out with the Boilers.
Has your Jeff Brohm river of enthusiasm hit its crest?
Well, I'm saying I was on an island that I wasn't that enthusiastic about Jeff Brohm. That a lot of that leverage came from him being from Louisville and that job opening up. But I understood that things had gotten a little bit interesting and the defense took a nice step forward early on in his tenure in West Lafayette. But this is me patting myself on the back thinking I may have gotten it right back then. I hope it's not the case, but it's tough times there.
This is the issue for Purdue. Sure, they've got a road game against UConn, but also a road game against Notre Dame, against Iowa, against Nebraska, against Ohio State, and against Northwestern.
I mean, the clear, when you look at Purdue and what they do and don't have.
Yeah, that's brutal.
UConn is almost assuredly a win. Illinois, there's a good shot at it being a win. A good shot, because it's at home and whatever. And then after that, Nebraska is on the road. Michigan State's at home. There's a decent shot there. But otherwise, I guess if Wisconsin continues to look kind of underwhelming on offense, there's a shot there. But it's a big, big shrug for me on Purdue football right now. And I have not done a deep dive of their roster, their injuries, the position battles, whatever. It's, again, the icy morass of February. I like that word a lot today for whatever reason. But this is tough winter term sledding.
You know, it dawned on me, this sound.
Yeah.
Now that we got Brett Bielema back.
Borderline erotic.
I just need to chop off the gobble.
Borderline erotic.
Unless it's in reference to November, which once again is a month filled with turkey gobbles. And we let him get his feet under him, September, October. And then this is where Illinois shines.
So I need a Novembert version and then just a regular borderline erotic version without the gobble.
Right, that's correct.
We need it 365 days a year.
Octobert.
Yeah, exactly.
Decembert.
All right. So not a lot of news, Dan. Shall we get into our topic du jour?
Yeah. I didn't really enjoy the Super Bowl all that much.
No, it was a terrible
football
game.
That's the only other bit of
commercials were the best part of the game.
Were they good? I didn't pay too close attention.
There were a couple good ones in there. Yeah.
There was a Will Ferrell one for GM. I enjoyed it.
Terrific beard. Yeah. Terrific beard. Yeah. Going to Norway. Yeah.
Very Nordic.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get to our game.
Let's do it.
You're as cold as ice.
Ice. Dan, we're talking college football permafrost. If you go to Wikipedia, look a little bit more. What is permafrost, Dan? Well, I'll tell you. It is ground that continuously remains below 0 degrees Celsius, 32 Fahrenheit, for two or more years, located on land or under the ocean. So I cannot think of anything more fitting to talk about here with relation to the season, with relation to the teams that we're going to discuss. Now, it should be noted, permafrost can thaw. It can thaw.
Takes extra effort and warmth and cocoa positivity.
I mean, it takes like global warming. It takes a real event to thaw out the permafrost. But it can be done. And I think we're going to look at some of these teams here today. Going to try and evaluate what has gone wrong. Why? How have these teams sunken to these depths, gotten this cold? Have they hit rock bottom?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any obvious optimism in sight? All of these things. Let's start with Virginia Tech.
Okay.
You're as cold as ice.
Ice. Virginia Tech. So I'm looking at Virginia Tech right now over the last couple seasons. And of course, they've had Justin Fuente there last 4 years running. It has certainly been a little bit of a case in terms of the on-field results of diminishing returns. 10-4 his first year.
By the way, it's 5 years now.
5 years?
16, 17, 18, 19, 20
five
seasons.
Years.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I counted wrong. 5 years, right.
Yep.
So 10-4 the first year, they win the Belk Bowl. Everyone's all excited about Justin Fuente.
Mm-hmm.
After that, though, 9-4 with a loss in the, Camping World Bowl to Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
Year after, 6-7, if you count the bowl loss in the Military Bowl against Cincinnati. 2019, 8-5, if you count the bowl loss in the Belk Bowl against Kentucky. And then, you know, this past season,
5-5 in the ACC, which is where they've been sort of 5-3, 4-4. And so 5-5 with 10 ACC games, you're talking about another 500 seasons. So the equivalent in a normal year of another 4-4 year in the ACC. For all the good that they may do in winning games, they bring losses to the table as well.
And
the first season, it should be noted, without, I believe, Bud Foster.
Correct.
The transition to Justin Hamilton occurred.
Correct. So didn't play in the bowl game, like a bunch of teams opted out of that bowl game. But you can make a very strong case here that things are trending in a bad direction. You brought up something interesting on the recruiting front, which all of this stems back to recruiting. But if you could, for our captive audience, Dan, number of blue chips over the last couple seasons for Virginia Tech relative to some of their peers in the ACC.
Well, just the last five classes have featured 5, 7, 7, 1, and now 0 blue chip players. And Virginia Tech, to me, and they're a little bit different than some of the other programs on the list we're going to discuss. This is all relative to the permafrost because, I mean, they've won games. They've been competitive against good teams. But in terms of the trajectory, it's getting colder and colder. And I think in 2018, when the Edmonds brothers both got drafted in the first round, there were 5 Hokie players drafted in that draft. In the last 2 years, there have been 1 total. So there's a direction that Virginia Tech is heading, so much so that Whit Babcock, the AD of the Hokies, had to issue a vote of confidence that, yes, I've called a press conference, but no, it isn't to fire and announce that we're letting Justin Fuente go, because that's where the program looks like it's heading. In terms of, and this, I think it comes down to vision. I think it comes down to the little things, which is there are very few head coaches who can sustain a pretty high level of success. Virginia Tech is a big time program. They are a big time program. And Frank Beamer, now in retrospect, we're probably not giving him enough cred, respect, whatever. And so when you look at the general direction of Virginia Tech, I think it comes down to quarterback. Interesting year from Jared Gerard Evans. He leaves after a year to go to the NFL. wanted to get out of Virginia Tech. Maybe he believed he was an NFL pick, whatever. He was not. Not an NFL quarterback. Promising freshman year from Josh Jackson, he leaves. Ryan Willis, Kansas transfer, not the answer. Hendon Hooker, promising, has injury issues and weird. We don't find information about him early on in the season why he's not playing. It looks like it was an illness. And then it's a Braxton Burmeister team. Quincy Patterson, a blue chip quarterback, he's now at North Dakota State. For somebody who turned Paxton Lynch into a first-round draft pick, there's something about this Virginia Tech offense. They can't run the ball. All of a sudden, Khalil Herbert's amazing. There's no solid ground to this offense. And we're talking about also what was a probable top 10 in the country defense in 2017 that has completely fallen off, had its moments this year. So there's some combination of Justin Fuente not connecting with his assistants, not connecting with players on his roster, not connecting with recruits, not necessarily making Virginia Tech a destination that people want to go to and remain at. That, and I know he's got a pretty big buyout, so who knows what the future holds for Justin Fuente in terms of longevity in Blacksburg. Again, a big time program. No matter what they've done year in and year out these past few years, this is a team that it's very difficult to talk about the teams who have succeeded in the ACC without including Virginia Tech, who would recruit three stars and get them drafted pretty high, would get them on all ACC teams, first and second teams. It just doesn't exist. That just does not exist in Blacksburg right now. And it's hard to see Justin Fuente having some sort of revelation and nailing a second act at this point. It's hard to turn around a program that is now just sort of stuck in that 500-ish area without really threatening good teams in the conference. And so I think they're stuck as long as he's there. And
yeah,
to you, when you watch Virginia Tech and you see Hendon Hooker look electric one week and then does look fully unprepared the next week, it's hard to see growth. It's hard to see course reversal. And their ceiling is still a big time program that develops underrated players in the Mid-Atlantic region and can get to fringe New Year's Six territory. But, and I don't change the ceiling, and I don't change my perception of the program overall based on these past few years, but it's hard to see that course correction under Fuente. It is.
Yeah, I'm big on trends when mm-hmm. I'm watching a team. And I think back to like the early days of, I think it was Brian Kelly at Notre Dame, like year two or year one. But the bowl game they play, the Champ Sports Bowl, I remember against Florida State, that was sort of like the apex of the season. And they had been building to that point. They were playing really well, playing hard. This was not a great football team, but it was apparent that they were building and that they were getting better and they were gaining some steam and momentum. And that carried through to subsequent seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it wasn't the best football team, there was at least a consistency of effort and to some extent a consistency of results. Would you associate Virginia Tech football with the word consistent at this point?
They've been consistently mediocre.
They are consistently inconsistent.
Right. There's, if you can't figure out quarterback, and maybe I'm too scarred from watching Braxton Burmeister with Oregon. They have two scholarship quarterbacks.
It's okay.
Right, but I'm saying if after 5 years, and Braxton Burmeister, he made some plays late in the year. He had a good game against Virginia, made plays against Clemson, but you know they got blown out by Pitt and Clemson. It was ugly. I think they gave up 90-plus points, and he led them to no second-half touchdowns. Is that what I'm seeing against Pitt and Clemson? Pitt on the road? So in terms of where the program is today in February, it's hard to see after 5 years if you don't have a clear answer or interesting battle for quarterback. It's hard to see this turning out all right. We like to talk about, right. You get one chance to hit the reset button. If you're an amazing coach with a ton of leverage and goodwill within a program, you might get two. I've seen that sort of conversation bandied about different places. We're at the point now where there's just a full lack of quarterbacks wanting to play for Virginia Tech and stay at Virginia Tech. Hendon Hooker promising he leaves for Tennessee.
Right.
And so
there it is. That's the point. That's the point.
There seems to be something amiss with quality players. And well, we saw Caleb Farley opt out, which is okay. That's a personal decision dealing with far bigger issues than just football this past year. He was a bright spot on that defense in the 2019 season. But it almost seems like a day-to-day Virginia Tech internal issue that has yet to be dealt with successfully. Well, just a guess. Total guess on my part.
The whole thing, watching Virginia Tech week to week, kind of felt day-to-day and week to week. You never really knew what you were going to get. I think that there is a talent issue. I don't think it's an aberration to look at that number of blue chips, see it dwindle. They were 10th in recruiting. In the ACC this last cycle. I'm not going to act like Virginia Tech is some juggernaut in the recruiting game, but they should be better than 10th. Tough place to recruit to, I understand that, but it should be better than 10th. And when you see guys outgoing and there are questions about the guys incoming, even on the transfer portal, you know, there were guys that they could have gone out and made more of an attempt to bring in that they didn't. And
right.
Over time, that adds up. So, look, we had Fuente on the show. We loved having him on the show. I think we're a little partial to guys we've had on the show.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean anything. But
ultimately, well, we talked about the solid verbal bump for a while.
Of course. And they were, I really liked watching Evans, the JC transfer early on. I thought they were buying themselves time to develop whoever, and it just didn't happen. It didn't happen for them. And we kept hearing Justin Fuente's name come up for jobs, open jobs, and then it just sort of dissolved into the ether. Is he going to Miami? Is he going to Florida State? Is he going here? And I don't know. Maybe there's a reason for that. Maybe there's that reason for that, that when people started digging into what's happening in Blacksburg, they're like, I think we're good.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Where should we go next?
You're as cold as ice.
I don't know. You tell me, Ty.
How about Arizona, Dan?
Let's talk about Arizona. Let's talk about Arizona, who at least it's easier to flavor this snow melting cocoa because there's a new head coach.
Snow melting cocoa. Jed Fish, the new head football coach. Let's take a look back here at the last, I don't know, 10 or so years of Arizona football. Kevin Sumlin was there, didn't go to a bowl.
Mm-hmm.
We had Rich Rod for six seasons, did make the Fiesta Bowl in 2014, going 10-4, lost that game, but still 10-3 season. Regular season's a pretty big deal at Arizona. Beyond that, it was mostly a 500 team under Rich Rod. Even if you go back to the Stoops era of Arizona football, it sort of ended up 4-8, but was mostly like a 3-8 or 5-7 or.
But they were a hard out. A lot of those years, they were a hard out. Even in the down-ish or the average-ish, the 4-5 in the Pac-10, 12, 5-4, Arizona was largely a hard out because they would put guys on the field like Kadeem Carey, like J.J. Taylor, like even Anu Solomon was looked to be a pretty good B.J. Danker. Like year in and year out, Khalil Tate at the end, they had certain weapons that it didn't matter who they were playing. They had these gravitational guys running a pretty lethal Rich Rod offense, and they were a tough out. You were going to have to beat them 52-49 at 1:44 a.m. to get out of Tucson with a win sometimes. And I don't know if that's necessarily their season, their ceiling, excuse me, but they've long been a hard out outside of, I guess, the end of the Stoops, the beginning and the end of the Stoops era. And what it was either 2015 or 2016 where Arizona was pretty down under Rich Rod. And then he, of course, leaves amid bigger circumstances internally. But the Sumlin hire was kind of a disaster. And that culminated with, would they lose by 70 to ASU this year?
Yeah.
We should also point out that 2020 results and circumstances are different than the 2013 year, a 2017 year, whatever. But the fact remains, Arizona has a ceiling of a pretty good program and are now in your permafrost zone.
They're in the permafrost zone. So the I guess the most obvious place to start is in the recruiting game. If we're going to talk about it with Virginia Tech, let's talk about it with Arizona. You have to go back to 2017 to find the first cycle that Arizona isn't ranked 11th in the Pac-12. In recruiting. Right. It has not been a strong couple years on the recruiting front. Why is that, Dan? Why is there a reason that athletes wouldn't want to go to Tucson as just a destination, not totally separate from the fact that, you know, maybe the scheme doesn't fit what they do, blah, blah, blah. But is there a knock on Tucson as a destination?
I mean, Tucson's fine. I've been to Tucson. It's warm. It's a school that's into athletics. They've had, what, national champion basketball, softball teams. Shout out was Jenny Finch, right?
Yep.
That was their incredible pitcher way back when. So it's a school that's enthusiastic. If you've watched an Arizona game against a bigger opponent at home, especially at night, that stadium can get rocking. There's enthusiasm for sports. It is a basketball school. There is the element of LA being the major population zone nearby where there are a lot of talented players. Arizona just has a tougher task that in that they don't have the pick of the best players in Southern California. ASU right now, based on just the profile that's been raised by Herm Edwards and some of their results, big games. And, you know, if you're a top offensive player, you have Chip Kelly, you have a good quarterback at USC to throw balls to you or hand the ball off to you, whatever. Then Oregon's recruiting Southern California well. What Arizona needs to me is either some sort of mastermind like Rich Rod, where he's gonna have such a specific system where he can just identify some players who are a little bit more raw and mold them to his system, be it, you know, Anu Solomon, Khalil Tate, whatever. That he has such a successful football mind that he can make it work, or it's somebody who can come in and tear everything down to the studs, lay down a new foundation and say, this is what a winning culture is. This is the type of player we're going to bring in. These are the types of coaches that I have found across the country to come in who have connections to top high schools, and high school coaches will feel comfortable having me recruit them, whatever. And Arizona can succeed. Arizona can absolutely be that hard out, be an 8-4, 7-5, 9-3, if everything goes well type of program once again. It's hard for me to see that in Jed Fish with the lack of program building experience.
Right.
Rich Rod had that. Obviously, Kevin Sumlin had that, but things were trending pretty downward, and things were trending downward for Rich Rod as well. But the hire of Jed Fish when the story started coming out that that was the president's preference, not the AD's preference, and that Brett Brennan enthusiastically, allegedly wanted that Arizona job with what he's done at San Jose State being as impressive as it was, him not getting the job, there are certain reasons that programs can stay down. And that is the type of decision-making at the top stays consistently bad. And we're going to get to Kansas. And I worry about that with Arizona. I like Jed Fish's hires. I am curious to see, like, how do you succeed at Arizona? Well, you got to convince talented players to come to Tucson. You got to go to Texas a little bit. I would, if I were Arizona, I'd go to the Midwest and see who, you know, Iowa's recruiting.
Dan Rubenstein, sign me up. First bus to Tucson.
Well, here's the thing. What are you selling if you're Arizona? You're selling warmth. You're selling attractive humans on your warm campus. So you got to go to cold places sometimes and say, you know what?
It's not the worst idea. And I agree with you on the recruiting front. You know, just looking at these numbers, it pops off the page at you that this is a place where you could very easily sell the weather. Like,
sure.
It's easy to say now in the dead of winter, but when you're in the permafrost, you need something. You need some warmth. Arizona's got the warmth. They're clearly not selling it. And so I don't know what it takes to invigorate that program with more talent, right. But I think that's where it starts. And, you know, I think of a guy like James Franklin. Like, he's not going to Arizona, but James Franklin can recruit.
Sure.
You need to start with somebody who can recruit the hell out of that program.
And recruit to a vision. Say, this is not just we're building something special, be a part of things on the ground floor. We're like, this is how we're going to use you. This is our vision for the program. This is the type of defense we're running. This is how you're going to be used in this defense. And this is how we're going to develop you. There needs to be a specificity about, and maybe Jed Fish has it. I'm hoping he does. That would be incredible if he does. But there needs to be a specificity that I don't believe Kevin Sumlin had in 2018 or 17 or whenever he was brought in, that you try to grab a big name because suddenly he just wants a job and you can afford him. That's how you set your program back, both in terms of culture, in terms of talent level, in terms of recruiting, in terms of reputation. Arizona just lost to their rival by 63 points. Again, it's 2020, but that's a pretty far fall off from where Arizona should be. I mean, they won, what, 10 games in 2014? Arizona is not a hopeless place in the way that places like Vanderbilt and Kansas or Rutgers, maybe not anymore, but can be. I think Tucson's in a much better place in terms of being set up to win. I know they redid their facilities relatively recently. I just think it's very tricky. And if you hire two guys who are not fits in a row, you're talking about maybe a decade of permafrost.
That's your permafrost. Yeah. Jed Fish, by the way, would not pass the Hudson News test.
No.
He looks a lot like the guy who coached me in baseball when I was 11 years old. Nice guy.
He was the Patriots quarterbacks coach or something?
Served.
He's bounced around a lot.
Yes, the quarterbacks coach for the New England Patriots and was also, I think, the assistant OC, some sort of offensive assistant for the Rams.
Right.
As well. So he's got some experience. Like you said, he's bounced around. Could be a fine head coach. Definitely doesn't pass the Hudson News test and came in under, some awkward circumstances where maybe there was a split at the top among who they really wanted to lead that program.
Right. This, by the way, is from Roger Sherman. Here's my stat of the day. Since 2010, only 33 NFL quarterbacks have managed to start 8 games and throw more interceptions than touchdowns. 4 of the 33 have had Jed Fish as a quarterbacks coach or offensive coordinator. In 6 seasons coaching NFL teams, coaching 4 NFL teams, the only Fish quarterback who did not throw more interceptions than touchdowns is Jared Goff.
No, that's brutal.
That's Matt Hasselbeck, Chad Henne, Blake Bortles, Goff, and 2020 Cam Newton. Now, I'm not going to go into those seasons. Everything's not always on a coach. There are circumstances beyond a coach's control. But in terms of what Arizona may have had available to them, in terms of coaches wanting to come to Tucson with a specific vision, it's definitely riskier. Seems riskier. Yeah. Roger Sherman of The Ringer.
Just got engaged. Congratulations, Roger.
He did just get. We love Raj. The best.
Good dude. All right. Where are we going next? You're as cold as ice. I might have to keep that sound around for longer.
Okay.
That's beautiful.
Do you want to talk about Kansas a little bit?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the bullets here we jotted down in our shared doc was, has the team hit rock bottom? If they haven't, they're kind of bobbing along the bottom. It's hard to get worse than
outside
going
of playing Texas. They seem to do pretty well against Texas sometimes. Yeah.
It's hard to do worse. It really is hard to do worse than what we've seen at Kansas. Just to recap over the last, I don't know, let's go back to the Weiss era. All right, 2012, 1-11, 3-9, 3-9, 0-12, 2-10, 1-11, 3-9, 3-9, 0-9 in 2020. You got to go back to the Mark Mangino era of Kansas football when they went to the Orange Bowl. You remember that season, 12-1, won the Orange Bowl, is a big deal. But outside of that, you are not going to find any double-digit wins going way back, way, way back in Kansas football. Way, way back in Kansas football. I'm scrolling up here on Wikipedia. I've got a 10-1 season in 1905 under Burt Kennedy. But otherwise, there's a couple 9-win seasons in there. It's a basketball school, right?
Yeah. I mean, at least it used to be. Are they still good at basketball? Is Frank Mason still there?
I don't think they're that good this year.
Okay.
But nonetheless, this is not a football program that is rich with any tradition. They tried to go the route of some splash hires with like a Charlie Weiss, trying it again now with a Les Miles.
Yeah.
I was okay with the Les Miles hire.
Mm-hmm.
I think the logic was that they got so bad under David Beatty that bringing someone in with a lot of enthusiasm, like Les Miles, might be enough to energize the program. I don't know if I was right about that, Dan. In spurts, yes. Can they get up for games? Yes. Texas? Sure. But in terms of building any kind of lasting success, I think you're on the money about like what you said with Arizona. You need a guy who's either a creative genius or somebody who can come in and recruit to a very, very specific plan. Otherwise, I don't know how you do it.
You have to get lucky. At this point with Kansas, there seems to be, Jeff Long went way back with Les Miles and hired Les Miles. Jeff Long came over to Lawrence. He was the AD at Arkansas. Les Miles just hired Mike DeBoard to be his new offensive coordinator, who has had stretches of interesting offenses, improved things a little bit at Indiana, but is in his 60s. You're not reinvigorating things with Mike DeBoard. Maybe if all the talent is in place, you can have a pretty decent offense. But there is an element at this point with how Kansas is hired, with the reputation Kansas has just in terms on the recruiting trail, with the recent results, when you look at recent scoreboards, there has to be an element of self-sabotage internally. There has to be an element. Remember the episode of The Office where Michael Scott ate Alfredo pasta before running a 5K to carb load? There's something about the Kansas athletic department and football program that there is, you're starting out with Alfredo sauce in your gut.
Oh, no.
And so they have to get lucky. Now, they tried to go outside with hiring Turner Gill way back when, and that obviously didn't work out. But there has to be an element with Kansas football of, we are a blank program. We are a blitz like crazy, take chances on defense, recruiting this specific type of player. We're just going to recruit a bunch of the fastest 3-star safeties we can possibly find in the lower plains and Southwest, whatever, who want to play immediately. And this is what we are. We are an option team. You don't have to be an option team. We are a spread team with this type of quarterback, and he's going to play early. But before you can go out and even find a coach, there has to be an element of, we cannot find a retread, and that's what they've messed up doing with Charlie Weiss and Les Miles. You know, David Beatty was, okay, he's a hungry younger player with a good reputation, recruited well for Texas A&M, didn't work out. There has to be an element of going out, spending money, and what do we see with Baylor? As they were down and out, obviously, with everything that happened, and rightfully so, And they go and they hire Matt Rhule. They pay him a ton of money and he has complete autonomy. He had taken a program that, you know, Temple was actually in a pretty decent place. Al Golden was pretty good, whatever. But Temple was in a pretty good place and he got them to new heights. He was able to go to a place that has certain limitations and maximize the abilities there. Kansas has to go out and find, you know, if it's Lance Leopold, whoever, that says, here's a 7-year deal. We're not even going to talk to you for the first 3 years. Here is a great assistant pool. These are the facilities upgrades you asked for. And that coach needs to have that specific vision that is uninterrupted by management. Mm. And short of that, Kansas is going to be mired in this, not even mediocrity, but that permafrost. And so
permafrost, right?
This is not a program with, as you mentioned, this is not a program with a winning reputation, a winning history. You go back to, you know, the Mark Mangino years were pretty good until they weren't, but Todd Reesing was pretty good. They've had players that they've developed into NFL players, or, you know, gone on to transfer other places to finish their development to get to the NFL. But it's not impossible. It's not impossible, but it means patience. It means identity, and it means kind of the, if all of my instincts are wrong, then the opposite must be right. And so if Jeff Long's instinct is, I'm going to hire Les Miles, who bombed out, allegedly, an interview with Houston, and hope for the best with him. Yay, he's vegan now. Okay. Cool. But also, you want somebody who's so hungry that they have binders full of their plan as to what they're due when they're finally a head coach at a Power 5 school and are just going to go balls to the wall. That's not Les Miles.
Right.
That's just not Les Miles. And so it's fine that he's a funny dude and dyes his hair and is good in front of a microphone, whatever. But Kansas needs to try at least 5 times harder than everybody else to convince a good coach to come to Kansas. And it's going to be money and it's going to be autonomy. And anything short of that, it's just another 2-10 season.
Yeah, there is a little bit of a Wizard of Oz quality to bringing in Les Miles, isn't there? It's great to have the funny man who everyone likes and can relate to and likes to talk about in the Twitter sphere. But at some point, you got to produce, Dan. And it just doesn't feel like this thing's headed in the right direction. It hasn't been for a while. And
right.
I recall, I think it was our friend Stu Mandel, when they hired Les Miles, he's very skeptical of the move. Very skeptical of the move. But acknowledged, like, hey, if he can get a little bit of momentum going and he's got a personality that maybe could turn people onto the program and build some enthusiasm, everyone acknowledged right from day one that it was a transitional hire, that he was hoping to, you know, maybe breed the next great coach who could step in and fulfill that Kansas destiny, Dan.
Well, here's the thing,
too. Hasn't happened.
The Kansas administration also needs to decide, because we saw stories recently of, should Kansas be a football school? Should Kansas field a football team? Where, if you're going to pay somebody $4 or $5 million to be a head coach, you can't be Les Miles. Like, you the investment needs to be there, not just monetarily, but belief, trust, vision kind of thing. That if you are not all in on football, that's cool, totally good. But don't throw $5 million into a furnace. Don't throw $4 million into a furnace. It's irresponsible, and it can be used in better ways. So that Kansas decision needs to be made, and it just doesn't seem that, like, when you hire Les Miles, you don't hire somebody with a vision. You don't hire somebody with a certain degree of hunger. You hire somebody who wants to be a head coach. That's it. And so I'm not looking at Kansas as impossible. I'm looking at Kansas as, you really, 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 really need to have every tool available to you to burn this thing down and start over. And anything short of that is just not. And I'm talking, what is the Kansas football ceiling? If Kansas, instead of hiring Les Miles, they went out and hired Matt Rhule somehow, or they hired, Sean Lewis at Kent State, or they hired somebody who has done a really interesting job, a younger guy, whatever. What's Kansas's ceiling as a program over you know, 3 years, they should be able to make a bowl. Two of those 3 years.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's my point. That's the great irony in this. Kansas has been really bad, right? They're plumbing the depths of college football in the Big 12. But is it really impossible to get a little bit of momentum and find yourself middle of the pack in the Big 12?
Kansas have hired Chris Klieman?
Yeah, well, I was thinking of that
Lance
too.
Lance Leopold?
Yeah. I was thinking of that too. It's very gettable, that nice, meaty middle portion of the Big 12. Not hard to rise up to that level. So, you know, they're in this awkward spot now where they're clearly not building a program. Right. But if they find the right guy, I think in a matter of a couple of years, could they find themselves in that middle of the pack? I'm not saying they're going to contend, but if you're Kansas, you'll take middle of the pack any day of the week.
Of course.
I think it's totally doable, but I don't think Les Miles is the guy. I was enthusiastic about the hire on day one. Not so much. Mm-hmm. Not at this point. I know better now.
Yeah. And what it also is going to be is hiring somebody not just with, I mean, it doesn't have to be a Power 5 track record, doesn't have to be a head coaching track record, but it has to be somebody with a force of personality to go with that organizational and cultural vision. It has to be that person who is going to say, this is how we practice on day one. This is how we practice on day two. This is how we recruit. Here is our messaging. Here is, you know, somebody who has that do better corporate jargon for me, Ty, that holistic 360 thinking.
Right, right. He's got the 30,000 foot view. Has the whole thing figured out from soup to nuts, you know it. Yeah.
Right. But that's not necessarily how athletic directors think. And maybe that's why search firms get involved, because they have to go to athletic directors and say, yeah, don't hire Will Muschamp to be your head coach. It's not necessarily clear that he's learned from his mistakes, things like that. And so it's a tough ask. I mean, if you're a coach, why would you go to Kansas? If you're Chris Klieman, why would you go to Kansas when Kansas State operationally is in a much better place? I get that. The answer is you have to pay him $7 million. You have to give him a seven-year contract, something like that.
Right.
And it's going to take a big swing. And Les Miles was not a big swing.
Why don't we do one more team?
Sure.
We can do one more team and then rapid fire. How's that?
That's great. Let's do it. You're
as cold as ice. South Carolina, Dan. South Carolina. Speaking of Will Muschamp relieved of duties after the 2020 season. I guess during the 2020 season, right? This was always a very curious hire.
Right.
And there was a 9-win season in year two of Muschamp at South Carolina, where we started writing and reading stories about how he had learned from his past experience. And over the course of time, I think that just kind of lost steam. It lost steam. Well, Muschamp reverted back to the mean. And what we got instead was sort of a bowl eligible-ish run of things here. 6-7 year one, 9-4 year two. 7-6, 4-8, 2-8 in 2020 in the awkward season. Now, you know, look, this is Will Muschamp stepping into a spot that had been long occupied by Steve Spurrier. So big shoes to fill.
Right.
Look, South Carolina finds itself in the spot now with Shane Beamer. They were just kind of treading water under Will Muschamp. And I guess the question is, where do they go from here? I don't feel like this is as big of a thaw job as some of the other schools. Certainly not as big as the likes of a Kansas, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah, it's all relative, though, because of where South Carolina, and we could talk about Tennessee, we could talk about Michigan. Obviously, Kansas is in a much worse place, Arizona in a much worse place than a school like South Carolina or Michigan. But also, South Carolina is not a powerhouse program. I'm not saying they got lucky with Steve Spurrier, because they were just flat out really good with Steve Spurrier, but timing-wise, they got quite lucky that Steve Spurrier was available and that Steve Spurrier wanted to hang around in Columbia for a decade. That's amazing to have that sort of personality, that sort of legendary coach who wanted to come to your school. Lou Holtz did not work out for South Carolina.
No, he didn't.
He went 5-7 twice. Brad Scott, that ended in disaster. You know, you just, you're, this is not a power program, but South Carolina does need that element because they're not far from talent. They are. They happen to be a far less sexy school in their own state of those two Power Five programs. That's a setback. If you're in the Atlanta metro area, if you're in the Charlotte metro area, there's talent available to come to Columbia, South Carolina. But what are you pointing to recently with Will Muschamp and with the Gamecocks? You're pointing to one year the offense is interesting, but the defense is a nightmare. The next year the defense is interesting, but the offense is a nightmare, and they're dealing with quarterback injuries, and they'll have an interesting player like Deebo Samuel, but that it feels like a blip. How long ago does Deebo Samuel feel like he was in Columbia? It feels like a minute, and it's been like a year and a half.
Yeah.
So I am confident that South Carolina has an interesting ceiling, but I'm also confident that it's getting more and more difficult. Because if you are a good player who is of SEC caliber, you're going to go to Georgia, Florida, Clemson. You're going to go to a school that's in that state or that's in that division and have a better chance of maximizing your potential. I look at how Shane Beamer retained Mike Bobo and immediately had him hired away as not the best sign. Now, I don't love Mike Bobo. He's fine. He's had some success. But there is an element of a new coach coming in and reacting to his hires with a, wow, ooh, this is an interesting staff. Wow, good pull. That tells me the coach can recruit, both in terms of assistant coaches and on the trail, the high school, the transfer portal, the JC. So everything I've heard about Shane Beamer is interesting, but South Carolina is also on kind of a weird treadmill between Vanderbilt and the power schools. They, you know, they don't have the reputation historically as Tennessee. They haven't put together a unit as good as recent Kentucky defenses. What are you selling modern South Carolina football on? It's a difficult question to answer. And so South Carolina right now, in terms of permafrost, need to find a quarterback. They need to find a very specific on-field vision. And they need to recruit like crazy. They need to pull in-state guys like they were doing with Spurrier, with Lattimore, with Clowney, guys like that. Easier said than done, given the superpowers in the area. But recruiting has to be priority 1, 2, and 3. And there has to be an almost unparalleled culture built in Columbia that is very different than what Will Muschamp had there. Because the ugliness of the end of the Muschamp era can't ever be seen again.
Yeah. That was not a good way to close out for Will Muschamp.
No. And then the disappointing thing is they'd bring in this recruit or that recruit, and then they would field a top 30 defense, like I mentioned. But then the offense would be a nightmare. Or they would have an interesting offense and the defense would get gashed on the ground like we've seen the last couple of years. And it has to be, I mean, if the Shane Beamer thing works out, it's going to work out because he hires amazing assistants and puts together probably, he'll need a top 17, 18 class annually to get this program anywhere near 7-5, 8-4 on a consistent basis. Right? I mean, it's hard to know. Shane Beamer is not somebody who has called amazing offenses or defense. He's been a special teams coordinator and seems well-regarded as a human, which is a great, great first step. They made the hire relatively quickly because of his history in Columbia, whatever. But yeah, that South Carolina treadmill where you're never going to recruit as well as at least two teams, maybe even three teams, considering what Tennessee has been able to do on the trail, you're never going to be able to recruit as well as them. And maybe I'm wrong. I'm always open to that. I'm wrong all the time. But that's that first challenge. And then the second challenge is, how do you keep people there? How do you keep assistants? Like, what is the assistant pool going to look like if all of a sudden an offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator pops and they put together a top 10, 12 unit? What kind of commitment does South Carolina have? Because it's not necessarily seen as a coordinator destination like some other schools in that area are.
Yeah, and look, they've done okay on the recruiting trail. You know, they're about middle of the pack in the SEC, and in a given year, they've been middle of the pack. This year, not as much. This year, dead last. But
right,
you know, I think we we consider the extenuating circumstances and maybe take it with a grain of salt, but the SEC is just so flush with talent that you got to compete on that level, got to reel some of these 4 and 5 stars in. And to your point, you got to have coaches who can build towards a vision and who can build some momentum, you know, build the system, build this thing so that it hits critical mass and recruits to itself. Will Muschamp was certainly not able to do that.
So, I'm at least happy that they didn't go in that direction twice in a row, where they didn't say, okay, Will Muschamp didn't work out. We're going to hold off and see if Gus Malzahn still has a job, and we're going to grab him if he doesn't. That's, again, one of those things that can set a program. Gus Malzahn, very good coach, but situationally, is Gus Malzahn hungry to build up South Carolina at this moment? Probably not. Yeah. Probably not. Wanted to make it work with Auburn.
I like the Shane Beamer hire.
Yeah, I think it's good, not necessarily to go, you know, hothead to a known nicer guy, or to go defense and then offense, whatever. I think that's dumb. You just got to go to the best possible guy you can find. If that's Shane Beamer, that's great. But going double retread is just always going to fail to me. It's just always going to fail.
All right. We're at about an hour here, Dan.
Okay. Do you want to hit a couple rapid fire?
Do rapid fire. You're as cold as ice. Syracuse, Dan. Where are we at with Syracuse? Syracuse won 10 games 2 years ago, went 1-10 this year.
Yeah.
5-7 in between, 4-4. 4-8, excuse me, the first 2 years of Dino Babers. Scott Schaefer era was a mess. Doug Marrone was...
He's okay. Ryan Nassib was fine.
Won 2 pinstripe bowls.
It's pretty good.
You got to go back to the 90s to find the last time that Syracuse was...
That Paul Pasqualoni?
That was Paul Pasqualoni. That was Donovan McNabb.
Yeah.
So...
That was Big East, too.
That was Big East.
Conference, yeah.
Syracuse is, in my view, a much, 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 much colder version of Arizona with a sprinkle of Kansas, in that it's a basketball school. You need a coach with that vision. And I thought Dino Babers was that guy.
I think I kind of still like Dino Babers.
Me too.
I think Dino Babers is a pretty good coach who found himself in a situation in Syracuse. Now what? He's at Eastern Illinois for 2 years, then he's at Bowling Green for 2 years. Bowling Green, not an easy place to win. Although they've had some pretty good coaches. Urban Meyer was there way back when. But he didn't hang out at either of those places long enough to sustain success. And Syracuse is it's a tough job. You mentioned the basketball school. It's in a dome. I think Syracuse is alarmingly closer to Ann Arbor than it is to Miami. Just in terms of the conference affiliation and recruiting to play ACC football. I don't know. It just, there's a sense to me that high 3 stars in that area are much more likely to go to, you know, Indiana or Purdue or Penn State. You know what? Like, it's just, there's not much to choose from in, is it Western or Central New York? I always forget. I think it's Central New York.
It's North Central.
North Central. Okay. I don't blame Dino Babers for taking that job because he had been an assistant for so long. And when you have that opportunity to coach a Power 5 school, you jump on it because you see where it can lead. Now, Syracuse has that geographic disadvantage with recruiting. It has that disadvantage of you're taking on teams in your conference that are in, it's night and day in terms of location. I don't know. You have to get so lucky. You have to get Duke's point guard to run your offense or something wild like that. And he may have just missed his window, Dino Babers, to make a leap after that 10-3 season. The thing I like about Dino Babers is everybody seems to respond to him pretty well personally. He's made good coordinator hires. Not always. I don't love Sterling Gilbert, but I like Tony White from San Diego State, and I like what Sean Lewis did there. It was, I think, his first 2 years, Dino Babers' first 2 years in North Central New York. So the Syracuse job is going to be difficult, and I still like Dino Babers, but it's another one of those places that the specificity and vision, even if they're amazing, the talent availability is always going to be such a tough mountain to climb. It might be one of those lightning in a bottle, get your grungy Eric Dungy, random talented quarterback right. from Portland, Oregon. And if you're not able to get lightning in a bottle, if you're not able to get a couple of interesting transfers from somewhere in the area, it's tough to expect annual bowl berths. It just is. And I'm still optimistic because there is that weirdness and that dedication to sports that Syracuse has. And I still do like how Dino Babers seems to resonate with yeah. players.
Right.
But there is that element of you're going to need a lot more injury luck than they've had these past couple of years. And you just gonna be able to, you need to be able to evaluate three times better than everybody else. So I don't know.
Let's do real quick.
Hit me. I'll go quicker than that. Sorry. You want to do Michigan? You want to do Vanderbilt?
Let's do Michigan State and Vanderbilt okay. to close it out. We always dunk on Michigan and Tennessee, so we'll leave them out of this. But
right.
let's go Michigan State. Let's go Vandy. So, you know, Vanderbilt, I think, is the easy one. Vanderbilt is perennially bottom tier of the SEC. James Franklin had a little bit of success there. I think we're really excited about the Derek Mason hire. Everyone we talked to at the time of that hire was super thrilled that he would go there and thought it was going to work out. Long haul, it didn't. But now to bring in Clark Lee, he's a guy who very clearly wanted that job. He was all in on that job, did a good job at Notre Dame on the defensive side of the football, has a familiarity with Vandy. So we wish him well. But Vandy's got to bring in talent, Dan.
Recruiting to a school in a city with high academic entry points. You're recruiting against Georgia Tech and Notre Dame and Duke and Northwestern. And you know, some of those are in bigger cities. But the level of competition Vanderbilt's going to be facing relative to the Big Ten West, relative to what Georgia Tech or Duke is facing, you're going to get embarrassed a lot, at least at first. And to get embarrassed with a very tricky course load, you're eventually maybe going to be a part of a rebuild. But I think you're right. I think that there can be something solidly built at Vanderbilt. I think Nashville can be a plus. But I think Clark Lee is going to have to absolutely nail these assistant hires. He's going to have to expand, I guess, the Vanderbilt brand nationally. I don't know how you do that immediately, other than, I guess, selling Nashville, selling academics. But then you're competing with Stanford. Like, it's a tough sell. It's an absolutely tough sell. And so, I don't know. I think there's a commitment from the school, from the athletic department, in terms of what they're up against in the conference.
I think about the Jeff Collins experiment at Atlanta. And he's just selling the hell out of Atlanta. And there have been embarrassing moments, right?
Sure.
If you've watched Tech football, you know there have been embarrassing moments. But I also feel like there is a little bit of steam. There is a little bit of steam on Georgia Tech. And right. they were plucky in spots this year. They played hard. I don't know if that translates to on-field success. A lot of times it does. But at least you get the sense that there's a very clear direction and a lot of enthusiasm mm-hmm. around that direction. So can Clark Lee do something similar in Nashville? We'll see.
I mean, history says probably not. The idea, though, that he went there, that he's from there, that there's going to be a buy-in and doggedness to Clark Lee that perhaps wasn't there for some previously failed head coaches. And again, the deck is stacked against Clark Lee. But in terms of the creativity involved in figuring out solutions to problems, in having a very specific kind of player in mind that fits what he's trying to do on both sides of the ball and what he's trying to do with that culture, I think that is an advantage that he is going to try to unearth every possible recruit, turn over every stone. He seems to have a good reputation. He was in demand last year as a head coach, interviewed at a few different places. So I think he has a better chance of succeeding than perhaps Derek Mason did, who had his moments, and certainly James Franklin did well, but at least on the field. I'm very cautious, but there is that element of personal buy-in that I can get seduced into enjoying.
Seduced.
Seduced. It didn't work out for Jim Harbaugh, or hasn't necessarily worked out for Jim Harbaugh always, but he still had some good seasons.
Final one, very quickly, Michigan State, go.
They're not necessarily in a permafrost situation. It's year two. They don't have a clear quarterback of the future, which is troubling. They lost a couple big recruits to Michigan, but it's still pretty early to, I mean, if Mel Tucker's lone season is 2020 as a new head coach, I'm willing to give them some time. The returns recruiting aren't amazing, but Michigan State can sell a relatively recent defensive identity and try to rebuild things on offense. So I'm not super down on Michigan State, but I enjoy Mel Tucker. I enjoy what his ceiling might be as a recruiter, as a program organizer, but I'm going to need to see a promising young quarterback in the next year and a half before I anticipate thawing to me. Does that make sense? Are you like, even when we were talking about Big Ten schedules, it was like, well, they have Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State. Like, there is still something in the back of my mind saying Michigan State is a tough out on a schedule, even if that's not necessarily the case. They still have that reputation to me. It doesn't matter on the football field, but I think there is that element of these NFL players went to Michigan State.
Sure.
This is what it looked like when we were in the Rose Bowl or the playoff. Don't look at the results in the last decade. There is that element of Michigan State has recently played and won big-time football games.
Sure.
That
sure.
Kansas, South Carolina, Arizona, all these other schools can't come anywhere near saying.
Well, so, and hey, look.
I can sell Michigan State.
Well, there's recent success in the last decade.
Yeah.
And that's more than a lot of the schools that we talked about today can say. They were in a playoff semifinal like 5-6 years ago. Lost, but they were in some big games. They're in the Cotton Bowl, the Rose Bowl. You know, so this is a program, like you said, with some real history. They've got the recent success of churning out really good defenses. I don't know how hard you want to sell on Kirk Cousins, but there's a starting NFL quarterback. And look, it's a program that I think could point to stability. Stability over the last decade plus. That is not something a lot of college football programs have. Towards the end, it got a little sour with D'Antonio, but still a bowl team upon his exit. Now you bring in Mel Tucker. 2020 is a weird year. I think you got to give it some time. But he's a guy who they obviously were very excited about. They paid him a lot of money to come over from Colorado, right? A ton of money.
Well, and it's not like that program was built on the back of blue chip recruiting. Eventually, recruiting got to an interesting place under Mark D'Antonio. But there's still an element of Mel Tucker seems to have a big enough personality that they're going to need to go 5-7, 6-6, and they're going to need a guy to pop as an All-American. They're going to need a guy to pop as a 1,000-yard rusher or, you know, making plays that end up on the Instagram feed of SportsCenter or whatever the metric is for success in 2021. They're going to need that initial chunk to build on.
No, I agree.
All
right. Well, this has been fun, Dan. Thank you for imparting some of your wisdom. I know you're very passionate about this
nonsense
subject.
Yeah.
And I wish you best luck in thawing that Chicago permafrost. It's been cold out there.
I looked at the 10-day. I looked at the 3-week. I've been looking at forecasts, and it hasn't got me going, Ty.
When in March is it going to start to come back to normalcy?
I think early March, it'll get into the high 30s, 40s.
Okay.
Which is apparently tropical for these parts.
All right.
I mean, I'm wearing long Dans to Trader Joe's. This is no way to live.
You're going 2 socks, right? You always wear 2 socks.
2 socks. Yeah, I got a pair of regular socks, cotton socks under my wool socks. Got long Dans. Got a big old jacket and beanie. And
you've been out of California for a while now. Usually it starts to to get used to it.
But in New York, I didn't have to shovel. I didn't have to drive. I didn't have to shovel out before I drove. You just walk out of your building and get on the train or something like that. It doesn't impact your day-to-day as much.
All right.
I swear to you, I'm going to learn eventually to complain less. I promise.
It's all right. We're all friends here.
That's my goal here. I know.
We're all friends here. Listen, solidverbal.com is the website. Verballers.com is the Patreon. Twice a week now in this year off season, I think the show we're doing on Thursday is going to be a Valentine's theme show.
Ooh.
You know, we talked a lot about thawing the permafrost. Maybe we do that courtesy of a Valentine's show, Dan.
I'm ready. I'm absolutely ready. We're going to thaw things out emotionally.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildenbrand. As always, stay safe, stay warm, stay healthy, and stay solid.
Peace.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.